Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Influence with Michelle Martin on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Singapore's first SPAC listing begins trading on Thursday. That SPAC is Vertex Technology Acquisition Corporation, established by Vertex Venture Holdings. It's targeting acquisitions in technology ranging from cybersecurity to new energy vehicles and biomedicine. The offering opened 8 p.m. last Thursday and will close at 12 p.m. today. The trading of VTAC units on the Singapore Exchange will commence on a ready basis 2 p.m. this Thursday. So three players are set to list on the SGX this month: Vertex Tech Acquisition Corp, VTEC, Taik Hao-backed Pegasus Asia, and Novotellus Alpha Acquisition. These players are going beyond base requirements, hoping to win retail investors over. So what do you need to understand about SPACs before investing in them? Chiu Yi is Chief Commercial Officer at Addix. She has more than 20 years of experience in capital markets. Addix is a Singapore-based private investment firm on a mission to provide equal access to capital markets. And they provide accredited investors with access to private equity, unicorns, hedge funds, private debt, and other alternative investments. Good morning, Oi.
Good morning, Michelle. Glad to be with you this morning.
Always great to speak with you. Perhaps we could start with a basic understanding of what SPACs are, since they sort of just emerged in the 90s.
Yes, so SPACs are very interesting. They actually were in the U.S. a long time ago, but you know, it came in obviously waves, and this is the current wave we're in. A SPAC is actually a special purpose acquisition vehicle, and unlike a company who does a traditional IPO and you look at the company and decide on the industry and the fundamentals, a SPAC is actually what is called a blank check company. What does this do? It currently does not run any business. It does not manufacture any products. It actually does an IPO to get cash from investors with the eventuality of acquiring a business in the future between sort of 1 to 2 years.
So, you know, as you say, they're often seen almost as a shortcut to market listing or a means for private companies to bypass the IPO process. So the logical question is a SPAC a safe investment?
Yeah, Michelle, I think every investment actually has to be looked at on its own merits, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of IPOs, equally, there are a lot that do well, but there are some that don't do well. I think that for the basic construct of a SPAC, what happens is that you put the cash in the company, the cash is actually kept safeguarded, right? Mm-hmm. If the SPAC does not find a target to acquire, then it returns the cash back to investors. And if it finds a target to acquire, it actually requires the investors to vote on whether this acquisition makes sense or not for the SPAC. So to some extent, it does give investors a deeper view into what potentially might happen to the SPAC and what business it would buy. So it would give investors one or two sort of opportunities to express. If they don't like it, they can take the money back or sell the shares in the market.
All right. In a while, we'll dive a little deeper into Singapore regulations and how they protect retail investors with regards to SPACs here. But first, I want to take a step back and get your opinion on the overview of the performance of SPACs as instruments. How have they performed versus equities, say, in the U.S. market?
Yeah, I think there has been a bit of a SPAC boom in the U.S. It has sort of, it depends on the sector. So I think broadly the SPACs have underperformed because there are many, many, many SPACs out there who have not done what we call the de-SPACing. So they have not executed the target acquisition. So the share price actually has been flat, right? Because it's based on cash. We do see those that have either executed or articulated strategy that target the healthcare and the tech space did do relatively better than those that targeted the, for example, the energy space. So even within the SPAC universe, there are those that are doing well and those that are maybe not doing so well.
All right. You know, once the talk of the town, if you survey commentators, many are questioning whether SPACs have lost their momentum. So do you think SPACs in Singapore could be welcomed with the same sort of fervor that we saw in 2020 in the US, where SPAC transactions were triple that of 2019? Do you think Singapore is well placed to be Asia's SPAC hub?
Yeah, you know, in the US, I think there were, 600 IPOs in 2021, right? I mean, that's an insane number. I don't know that they can find so many targets out there. But in Asia, I think what's happening in Asia is the technology obviously has been a big sector for the US in the last, you know, sort of decade or so. But what's happening in Southeast Asia and ASEAN and Asia is obviously the rise of the technology companies as well. So I think it is actually timely for an Asian financial hub like Singapore to start this initiative, because the increasing number of growth companies that are able to expand very quickly. And I think the opportunity to deepen the capital market availability for these companies is also, I think, very welcome. I think where investors should take a different view of SPACs relative to IPOs, it does give you access to world-class sponsors. And, you know, increasingly, it is a liquid private equity alternative. And I think those are very positive aspects of the SPAC.
So Hong Kong is also going to be looking to attract SPAC listings this year. It's rolled out a framework for SPACs last month. So Singapore likely competing with Hong Kong to attract those SPAC listings. How do you think investors here in Singapore are going to react to SPACs?
Well, I think Singapore's investors in Singapore have been, I think, very used to the REIT market, the real estate market, right? It's a very safe instrument. It's dividend and, you know, dividend paying, you know, it's fairly sort of predictable. There are good sponsors out there. But, you know, we really need to develop the growth space, the technology space. And you know, a lot of these companies may not be profitable yet, but have a very strong business path ahead of them. And in the many, many respects, this gives the Asian or the Singapore investors exposure to these companies. And I think ASEAN in particular, how we might compete with Hong Kong, is Hong Kong is still sort of seen as a bigger Northern Asia, China exposure. I think there's so many opportunities that Singapore can position itself for ASEAN technology growth out of the specs that are listed in Singapore. I do think that we do have a natural affinity for that.
Now, investors don't exactly know where their capital is going to, how it will be used. That's what the structure allows for, hence the term blank check company, right? So how can a retail investor evaluate a SPAC?
Yeah, this is a very interesting one. I think I watched the three that are obviously in the market. And I think what's important is to look at the track record of the sponsor. I think that is a very important first step. Who's the sponsor? Do they have the pipeline? Do they have the relationships that they are choosing to focus on? So, for example, different SPACs will have different strategies. One might focus on big data and artificial intelligence. One might focus on healthcare or consumer tech. And then the question is, do they have a track record of executing either private equity deals or have relationships in that space? I think that's one. But two, you know, as you know, with M&A and even with capital markets, there's never a certainty until it gets done. So the question is, watching the ability for the sponsor to execute the track record in past PE deals is important. But I think also three, the alignment of interests, that gets a little bit more technical. You know, how much a sponsor is going to invest into the SPAC, either at the beginning or as a de-SPAC, are also some of the things to watch out for.
All right. So we're on the cusp of our first SPAC listing here in Singapore, which begins trading this Thursday. What are the key differences that an investor needs to understand between a SPAC IPO and a traditional IPO? You touched on it earlier, but I wonder if we could get into it a little bit more.
Well, I mean, I would say that most SPACs trade around the cash value, right? I mean, that kind of is, at the moment, what is in the company. So I generally don't expect volatile trading for now, because I think it's still very, very early stage. I think it would be great to see the sponsors develop their thesis over time. So it is a longer-term communication process for the sponsors and their investors to ensure, because it's a longer-term success play, not the first-day pop.
Got it. We know that regulations governing SPACs are different across jurisdictions. I want to get a sense of your opinion of Singapore's regulations and how they protect investors. For example, do our regulations expect the approval of retail investors for acquisitions? And do they also specify a lock-in period for investors?
Yeah, so I think Singapore SPACs have a stricter rule book to the U.S. Although there's probably also, you know, the Hong Kong is also coming up with their own, and Hong Kong, I think, has a couple of things that they're stricter relative to Singapore. For example, in Hong Kong, specs are not open to retail investors. But in, you know, the US, and I think Singapore has followed that, is this is actually the way that retail investors can express their investment ideas into growth companies. So in Singapore itself, there are sort of size, so minimum market cap, for example, there's no floor in the US. So what Singapore is looking for is also a certain, at least a decent size spec or a company eventually. Mm-hmm. There are some requirements around sponsors being aligned in terms of interest into the spec itself. So they do have to take up a certain amount of shares in the IPO, and so that they're aligned and have some skin in the game. And the de-spec, or, you know, when the approval of the merger does require more than 50% of independent directors and more than 50% of shareholders voting to support the transaction. And finally, I mean, some of the big points here, the sponsor shares from IPO to de-spec has a what we call a lockup, a moratorium. So 6 months after the de-spec, the sponsors are not allowed to sell down the shares. So it does allow for a orderly liquidity post de-spacking.
We know that Singapore companies, some of them are already involved in SPAC deals, ride-hailing and food delivery giant Grab Holdings, Property Guru, for example, both on NASDAQ. In your opinion, who are the potential unicorns that could benefit from a SPAC market growing here?
Wow, I think some of the stats are suggesting there are actually more than 100 companies now, private companies in ASEAN that have raised more than 50 million equity funding, and a lot of these are in Singapore and Indonesia. So I couldn't really give a guess. You know, there's so many now. I think there are many in fintech, and there are many companies in the private space that are not publicly known yet, but are certainly running a very strong growth business. And many of them could be targets for SPACs.
All right. Final question for you, Oi, on the topic of what retail investors need to know before diving into a SPAC. What do investors need to know about being able to redeem their funds?
Yeah, so I think at any point of time that say they for some reason want to sell the shares, obviously that is available in the market in general. But at the point of, let's say, after the 2 years or whatever it is that the SPAC has to de-SPAC, if they don't find a target, obviously you can redeem the shares. Or if you don't like the proposed target or acquisition, you can also choose to redeem.
All right. Always great speaking with you, Oi. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks, Michelle.
She's Chu Oi, Chief Commercial Officer for Addix. We are talking about Singapore, welcoming our first three SPAC listings this month.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.
When it comes to business travel in Orlando, it's never business as usual. Oh, sure, I could go on for days about all the incredible places to hold meetings, or the Michelin dining, or the innovative industries that'll make you feel right at home. But Dr. Michael Edwards of Ocean Insight said it best. Orlando is as much a business capital as an entertainment one. So dive in and see what's happening in Orlando, where the possibilities for business travel are unbelievably real. Learn more at Orlando for Business.com.